It is the final installment in the Mike French pre-draft series. It is time, Frenchy, as we are a mere 2 days away by the time this pod comes out from the 2024 NFL draft. We've talked all your favorite players in each of the positions. You gave us your full Cowboys, Giants, and Jets mock. But now the true time has come. Unveiling of the official 2024 Mike French mock draft. How we doing, sir?
Whew, we are doing well, my friend. Home stretch, but the work really goes in well before this, but it's just great having the chance to talk it all out with you and the feedback and criticism and jokes that come from this are just spectacular. So please, if you have any comments at all, send a barrage of texts, emails, and phone calls to Sean at two. No.
Yes, I'll be obviously promoting this by sending everybody your personal information because that's what everybody wants. We're really excited for this part. Obviously, you know, the thing that you realize about the draft process, and you know, you and I have talked about it both on the pod and off. I can't even remember which now because we've done so much content lately, but the draft process for me just feels too long. It feels like now over the last couple of weeks, nothing that any of these executives are passing off to the insiders is true. I think it's all jockeying for positioning. I think it's all these teams have known what they're doing. They've worked out all their contingency plans at least through the pro days. And I think even the pro days are useless. So to me, man, like this is just overthinking season and it's smokescreen season. And now I'm just so fucking excited to see what actually happens because it's been talked to death.
Yeah, we're finally reaching the end, which is a fantastic piece here. I think this whole year is kind of, the days are really short, but the weeks fly by. And this is kind of how I feel on the, like, come up to the draft. It's like the draft feels as if it's months away until it's basically on top of us. And then all of a sudden we're here. But it's a great feeling. And I can't wait to watch all of this play out and find out all the ways I'm wrong.
The one thing that I'll say is we're about to get into this in a second, but the thing that I've learned the most from having you, this is your sixth year doing this with us. And every single year, the humility that you show and the work that you put into it is truly remarkable. I know that this is a hobby for you, that one day should turn into a job that pays you and compensates you very well. Because it's amazing the encyclopedic knowledge that you have of these players, of the tape that you recall. Because this truly is a 365-day-a-year process. I mean, you're going from off-seasons, and now you're balancing everything out with transfer portals and players playing in all these different kind of systems for all these different coaches. So it really is a lot. As somebody like me who's obviously very interested but has my tipping point where, as I've exchanged texts with you, I don't want to hear any more rumblings. I'm done. I'm over it. But for you, you got to take everything into consideration. So is this a happy time for you? Do you feel relieved when the draft ends? Or do you kind of immediately pick up and say, what do I need to work better on evaluating next year?
Yeah, don't tell my wife this is my comparison, but it kind of reminds me of my wedding. In the sense that like there's this wild buildup and the work going into it is heavy. And as we get close, there's very little more to be done, and it's just kind of waiting. And then all of a sudden, it's just this huge rush, and it's exciting and energetic and sometimes devastating. Not my wedding, though. And
are we still talking about this, or are we?
No, but there's always like stress, and a couple things go wrong, and then some things are spectacular, and then like at the end, we look back and we're talking about different stories and memories and this and that and all the things that like go into it. You see that work come out. For me, just being able to be involved in these sorts of discussions and being able to know what's out there. My wife walked by the other night when we were talking about linebackers, and she heard your point about Trevon Wallace from Kentucky, who was a bit more of an off the radar selection. And she said, if all those people don't know these guys, how do you know him? And I was like, well, a year ago, I was watching some tape on Kentucky for a game that they had against Florida. And I noticed this guy who was making plays a lot. And so I jotted his name down and kept an eye, you know, and it's just one of those things where, like, I have endless lists. I obsess. I don't do things part way. If I'm going to, you know, learn about the draft, I'm learning about the whole thing. If I'm going to learn how engines work, I'm trying to build a rocket. Like, and for all the folks in the, CIA listening, I'm not building any rockets in my backyard.
That's a good distinction. All right. Enough fucking around. Let's start with the mock. What we'll do here is kind of what we've done in years past. Let's go 1 through 10, kind of rattle them off, say as much as you want about each player and each pairing, player and team. And then what we'll do is kind of, I'll ask any questions that I have or any curiosity that the general audience might have about where you have players selected. So without further ado, let's go 2024 mock draft. You're on the clock.
Yeah, sure. Sounds great. So I'm just going to run through this whole piece here. But as always, whenever I'm on, there is no NFL fan whose team does not get a pick. After the Chiefs pick at the end of the first round, I still have 3 more picks for the Panthers, Texans, and Browns. Because, every fan base gets represented here. But top of the draft, number one, Chicago Bears on the clock, off the clock. It's Caleb Williams, quarterback from USC. At this point, I think it's pretty much a guarantee. But I will share one piece that recently came out. I first heard it from Adam Schefter, though I don't know if there is anyone else. I know he heard it from someone, but Schefter's usually the first one to report it. So I'll take the story from him first. When the Chicago Bears brought Caleb in for a visit, instead of going out to dinner with the executives and the coach and the general manager, they sent him to go out to dinner with some of the leaders on the team, DJ Moore and a few others who were part of this dinner, just to make sure that Caleb Williams is going to be able to vibe in the locker room, see how the team is receptive to him, and those sorts of things. And the Bears are a spot where they've had some troublesome histories with quarterback position, be it from skill or by personality. So when you have someone who knows the skill that well, or has the skills, and you know that they are going to play that well, I think it's a really neat way for them to do something a little different to make sure that they'll fit in the locker room as the franchise, you know, that he's going to be. At two, I've got the Commanders. And God, I wanted to put J.J. McCarthy. I hesitated so much, but I couldn't do it. I just don't see it. I've got Jaden Daniels. There's a great clip. Oh, it was beautiful. Brian Kelly slipped up and already said that Jaden Daniels is going to the Commanders. Listen, people have been wrong with that sort of thing. But
did you do that on his Fugazi Baton Rouge, Louisiana accent that he did on his opening day?
I love it. Everything he does is so wrong, and yet he's still a pretty damn good coach. But man, like, since Saban left, and even since Nick Saban got grandchildren, Brian Kelly became the angriest man in college football, and his face goes bright pink. It's hysterical. The man is a walking meme, and I love it. But the Commanders here, I've got them going with Jaden Daniels because I think he's the second best quarterback in the class and top 5 player. They did have a little tiff that happened recently where Jaden thought that they were going to go finalize things on his most recent visit, and they pissed him off by inviting other quarterbacks to what he thought was a one-on-one meeting. That sort of stuff's going to blow over. No one's going to care. It's cool. It's a funny story now because we love when Washington makes mistakes. It's funny when they do this because they keep doing it, right? But Dan Snyder left, and now they make good decisions. It's ridiculous. I think that Jaden Daniels is a really dynamic playmaker, great legs. And that's, just part of this. I think with Terry McLaurin, he's going to be able to have so many explosive plays on the sides where McLaurin's able to really use his speed to exploit defenses. I think that that connection is going to be great. Dan Quinn's also a defensive guy. And one thing we know about a lot of defensive guys, they prefer to have running quarterbacks or quarterbacks who can run because they hate facing running quarterbacks or quarterbacks who can run. I think Dan Quinn sees Jaden Daniels versus the other guys who there and thinks, if I was a defensive coordinator prepping, who do I want to play the least? That's Jaden Daniels. So he's the guy you should want to have on your team the most. And number three, we have the Patriots going with Drake May, quarterback from UNC. I couldn't do it. I couldn't put JJ here. There's too many rumors, but I just got to go with the tape and, you know, understand the way this goes. But I think a big piece with this right now is that Elliot Wolf, who is running the Patriots draft this year, is not the general manager. He would like to be the general manager, but he's not the general manager. Maybe he'll be the manager to the general manager. Who knows? Right now, he has a couple other long titles, but he wants to be a general manager, and Robert Kraft wants a new quarterback. I also think it fits really well with the Patriots because Jacoby Brissett's no superstar, but he is he's adequate to hold it down while Drake May develops with him. So I think that's going to be that would actually be a really nice fit for him to kind of continue to grow into the person and quarterback, mostly the quarterback that he needs to be. That'll give him the chance to, you know, iron out some of the fundamentals that he's got to have and, you know, see the way that NFL quarterbacks look at trying to stop a play from going south quicker by making smart reads instead of holding onto the ball to try and force something big to happen. It may learns how to pick his spots and help with the little fundamentals. I think that this could be a home run selection by the Pats. The other team to watch out for with this pick is the Giants, I think, could be one. But the other one is the Vikings. I think the Vikings are as in on a quarterback as you could be. But the Vikings really covet Drake May. McCown, who's the Vikings offensive coordinator, was Drake May's coach in high school. So they go way back. And if May isn't the pick here, they will try flying up as far as they can. But you know, they're not the only team who would be going for someone like that. Just something to keep an eye on. At four, the Arizona Cardinals, I have them going with Marvin Harrison Jr. This raises the level of the offense across the board. Kyler gets a receiver who's going to get open with ease and threatens the defense. I think that the Cardinals are willing to go down, but I don't think they're looking forward to it. Someone make the joke. At five, this is the first and only trade I'm doing in these mock drafts, despite the fact that the drafts are always full of trades. I think the last 2 years they've had 9 and 5 trades in first rounds. So in this one, I do it because I don't see another possibility for how the draft will go. The Chargers had some big cap issues that they had to sort out, but they also have a few more needs that they can address. So I have the Vikings coming up here, and in that swap, the Chargers get pick 11 and pick 23, as well as some future considerations that will leave relatively vague. I don't know what the exact formula is going to turn out to be, but I think that if any team makes a move into this group to get a quarterback, it's going to be the Vikings, and I think the most likely place they do that is the Chargers. So I have the Vikings coming up to five to take J.J. McCarthy from Michigan. And he's got an NFL-ready game as a quarterback, even though it's still developing. Doesn't make big mistakes, has a pro attitude, and I think his skill set is really good for the sort of offense that O'Connell wants to run in Minnesota. Minnesota runs the classic Shanahan. It's a lot of zone read. You need a quarterback who's athletic enough to do a lot of things on the move. And McCarthy's shown that he's able to do that. He also uses his legs to get some of the dirty work going. You know, quick runs himself, handoffs. And one thing that makes coaches love this guy is the fact that he cares more about winning than he does starring. So for some coaches, you look at the fact that he didn't throw a pass against the, in second half against Penn State. Some are going to see that as a negative, that he, you know, the team didn't trust him, or they didn't think he was good enough, or they just thought it was kind of irrelevant of him. Other coaches are going to see that and think that this is a guy who is selfless. He leads by example and will do whatever it takes for the team to win. And so I think that's the sort of player that coaches can fall in love with and might lead to him being drafted here at 5.
Okay.
At 6, we could take a pause.
Yeah, so on that, because I don't want to lose it right now, because I think that obviously that makes too much sense to not happen for both where both of those teams are positioned. You know, the Chargers, obviously, they have their franchise quarterback. I know that they did lose some skilled position players, and Eckler is gone. And then obviously they traded away Keenan Allen, and they let Mike Williams walk. So they could go at a skilled position player, but another really good one is going to be available to them in that hypothetical trade. McCarthy from Minnesota is really interesting. As we talked about when we did the episode with the quarterbacks, I'm not his biggest fan, but I do really like the situation he'd be walking into there. Of you have Justin Jefferson, you have Jordan Addison, you have TJ Hockenson. I mean, there's a lot of talent there where he's not walking into a situation where he's essentially got no help and he's going to be floundering. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that. I actually, of all positions, McCarthy could go, even though I still think trading up for him is a little bit of a reach for my liking. That would be a pretty damn good spot with, of course, O'Connell as the HC.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what you just said is why the fit makes sense for them. It's the right scheme. He's got all the pieces around him. He even got some solid offensive linemen there. Christian Darrisaw is a good player too. JJ to JJ, the headlines write themselves. And it's going to be a nice fit for him because he gets to do what he's been doing, which is playing well enough to have the great teammates around him succeed. I'm not sure who first came up with this idea, but I first heard it from Mark Schlereth. He talks about quarterbacks as tractors and trailers. So you got some tractors that pull everybody along, and then you have trailers where the rest of the team has to pull them along. And JJ McCarthy might be a trailer, but he's one who's going to be really good for that situation. He's a light trailer. He's going to make other people's jobs easier, even if him doing that isn't enough alone to elevate people to, you know, stardom and Super Bowls. The team around him being good enough is going to make it so that he can succeed and he can do those things because of the attitude he takes to it, the skills he has with it. And he's also a talented player. You know, he was a top recruit coming out of high school. He then went to a situation where he wasn't asked to do everything. And if you do what some of these guys do, which is go back to tape all the way back there to talk about how guys develop an opportunity and all this, you could really look at McCarthy and be convinced there's a lot more to grow into here. So I think the fit for the Vikings makes a lot of sense. The fact that we might disagree about the value is, that's kind of up to them to figure out. I think that this is high. I think that the high relative to the grade, I'll say. But if McCarthy is someone you think can be a franchise QB, taking him at 5 makes sense. That's, if you have the chance for a franchise QB, there aren't a lot of prices that are too high to pay. It's just how convinced you are that he's going to be that. And what we've seen with the moves the Vikings have made thus far and the rumors that seem to be coming out, they feel pretty confident in this quarterback class. And my guess is this is the guy that they're going up to get.
And what I was going to say right there is exactly what you said, right? Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where we have players ranked. The reason we do your rankings is to see where you're grading them against their peers from a strictly unbiased situation. When we're mocking players, we're looking at teams' desperation. In today's NFL, you don't win without a really good quarterback. You know, you go back to Daniel Jones at 6. Was he picked there? Was that a mistake? you know, countless all the time. Sure, maybe I think that it was a reach for sure, particularly when you look back and say, hey, could they have gotten him a little bit later on? But that was their guy. They identified him as their guy, and they're going to go down with the ship if it sinks. And if they really love him and they have the right plan in place, you know, you're looking at J.J. McCarthy potentially being the next great quarterback for the Vikings for the next 7 to 10 years. Or if it doesn't work out, at least you can say, hey, that was our guy. I just don't like the notion of, shit, we're running out of potential quarterbacks because the other three are already gone. We really need a quarterback. Now you're reaching. As long as he's your guy in that spot, great. But if he's just a player at that position and you're not full-blown love with him, I think that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're not trading up for the pick to see who's there. You got to be trading up for the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that, if that's your guy, go get him.
All right. Let's hear the rest of your top 10 here.
Yeah, so at number six, as longtime listeners will know, I gave the Giants Malik Nabers in the Giants full draft mock. Really explosive player. Something they're lacking is big plays, explosive plays, and guys making things happen with the ball in their hand. Nabers can attack the defense at every level. He's a fantastic route runner and a really explosive player. And as I mentioned before, Kafka and Dable, the situations they've been part of before at the receiver position have a tendency to prefer explosion and strong route running over other traits, which is why I gave them Nabers instead of Odunze, who I think is also very worthy of the selection. At seven, we've got the Tennessee Titans taking Joe Alt, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. Brian Callahan's the new coach for the Titans, and he got his dad, Bill Callahan, to join him on his staff. Bill Callahan is the best offensive line coach in the game, and there's not really much of a second. I think this is a really nice thank you gift to give your father, and Alt's got elite movement ability, and you plug him at left tackle, you got Skoronski at left guard, that side of the line, you're set for the next decade. But I will at least say, watch out for the potential for them to take a wide receiver here. DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, both on the older side. Treylon Burks, he hasn't developed in the way that some of us projected that he could. And, you know, we could talk quarterback and offensive structure as well with this. But that's a spot where I would be surprised, but not shocked if they decided to go the wide receiver route. For the Falcons at eight, I've got them going with Dallas Turner, the edge from Alabama. I think that they have to attack the pass rushing on this team. The Falcons had a pressure rate last year of 23.7%. That was the lowest in the NFL. And in fact, it's the lowest in the NFL since 2016, when Next Gen Stats started tracking that. Falcons lack pressure. Dallas Turner right now is the best player at pressuring the quarterback. He's sound in the rest of his game and has athletic traits that are still developing into talent and tools that he can use. So there's still room for growth, and he's already, my opinion, the best one in the class right now. Jimmy Lake is the defensive coordinator for Alabama, and it is worth noting that he was the defensive coordinator at the University of Washington when Leatu Latu played at Washington. So still same position with the edge rusher. If Atlanta moves, there's some talk they might be willing to go down. It's potential that they might look at him if Turner goes off the board as well. Out of the Bears at number nine, this is the pick from the Carolina Panthers, going with Rome Odunze. Odunze helps Caleb make all the difficult plays easier. We've seen Odunze take in a lot of off-target passes before, and the explosive offense that Caleb brings, especially off script, is going to be really it's going to work well with the ability that Odunze brings. What I'm really trying to get at is the fact that when the play breaks down and things get a little bit more difficult and passes are a little more off just because of the added movement, as good as Caleb is getting the ball where it's supposed to go, having Odunze gives him a little wiggle room with that, and Odunze is going to make some plays that are going to be incomplete or even interceptions for other players into catches and highlights for the Bears. And at number 10, I've got the Jets going with Brock Bowers. Not just because it's what Aaron Rodgers wants, but that matters. That's the way that they're making some of these selections. But more importantly, top three receivers are gone, and I think that they're going to use this draft pick to attack the skill positions and pass catchers in particular. They signed, or rather they brought in John Simpson, Tyron Smith, and Morgan Moses. They brought in three new starters for the offensive line already. And I think that with this asset, they've got to spend it somewhere else instead of a backup and developing guy, despite the fact that Tyron Smith needs, some real depth behind him. If you haven't gotten the chance to listen to my full Jets mock draft yet, I suggest you go back and listen to the one that was uploaded yesterday. But in this case, I have them going with Brock Bowers. He's going to bring a lot of variety. The Nate Hackett offense is the same one, the Kevin O'Connell and the Kyle Shanahan and all these others. And the tight end, especially when you have a tight end who can block and move and come across the field and turn big plays once they get the ball in their hand, that's a huge asset for them. He's going to get extra yards with every catch. He's going to give them a top playmaker other than Garrett Wilson. And he's also going to get into some of the dirtier, tougher areas. That's going to help Garrett Wilson stay clean, stay healthy, and be able to stretch the field and use some of his explosion a little bit more often. And that brings us through 10.
Beautiful. So thoughts that I have right off the jump here. Obviously, Caleb, one, if you pair him with Rome Odunze, obviously pick number 9 is the Bears pick already. 1 is from the Panthers. If you're getting him a receiver to pair with, obviously DJ Moore, you've got Cole Kmet, you traded for, what's his name from the Chargers there?
Mike Williams. No, the other one. Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen. Thank you. You got Keenan Allen, you got DJ Moore, you got Cole Kmet. You bring in the running back Swift, who's also good out of the backfield. You got Rome Odunze there. That is a fucking home run for the Bears. If you walk out of picks 1 and 9 with your franchise quarterback and a top receiver, that's amazing. At 2, Jaden Daniels. He does feel written in the stars there for Washington, even if Brian Kelly did slip up. I just can't see them passing on the tantalizing talent that he is. If they fuck it up, that's more on them. He has all the skills to be an elite player in this league for a long time. 3 is where it gets interesting. I've seen the Patriots, I've read from Schefter, I've heard from a lot of others, that the Patriots could trade that pick. In my humble opinion, I can't see why in God's name they would do that. Even though they don't really have a true GM, as you detailed, running their draft, Renchi, this is a situation that teams – you never hope to be one of the worst teams in the league. And the only reason they were this bad was because they were so inept at winning close games. They already traded away their first round quarterback from a couple years ago because, let's say, he wasn't the most talented player in the world, but we saw him have a good rookie year. They made the postseason. You give him Matt Patricia as offensive coordinator after that. This team has no skill position players at all. They are so bereft of talent from the skill position guys. Go get Drake May. He's a top-tier prospect. Start Jacoby Brissett. Let him take the slings and arrows of having to work with a very mediocre offensive skill position core. And then let May kind of ease his way through, get him a bit more talent throughout the rest of this draft, and maybe as the year goes on into next. And you have a franchise guy. I can't see them being that headstrong to say, we'll just collect more picks. No, you finally are in position to go get your next franchise quarterback and do it correctly. That's all my thoughts on May and number 3 with New England.
Yeah, I agree. But I also agree with if they aren't sold on Drake May, you shouldn't take him.
Well, that's a different story, right? That's what we were talking about with McCarthy. If they're not sold on him, then yeah, all bets are off. But if they love him, it can't be we love him just as much as we love the idea of more picks and we'll just find another quarterback.
No, I can't imagine that's the discussion they're having. If there is an issue with May, it's that they're not sold on him and we shouldn't be talking about it. I'm not convinced that they aren't. This is misdirection season. There's a lot of conversation going on out there, but there was that slip up with the Vikings at a news conference making a joke that Robert Kraft didn't like very much. And is it because they've already got some turns figured out, or is it because they pissed him off? Who knows? But at this point, I find it difficult to see the Patriots not taking a quarterback at three, especially with Robert Kraft's holding the carrot of the GM position in front of Elliot Wilson-Oates. But, you know, it's possible that's where the Vikings move up and they go get Drake May. I think it's unlikely, but always possible.
Four, Arizona has been documented as being quote-unquote open for business. This is a team that makes sense that if you can get a King's ransom from a team like Minnesota, let's say that they trade up to four instead of five because maybe the Chargers are dangling that pick to somebody else, a Denver, somebody like that. But to me, I think it's just you've clearly made it a point that Kyler Murray is going to be your franchise quarterback. You're not drafting another one. Go get him the best player in this draft, potentially. That's not named Caleb Williams, and that's Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't think that they have to overthink this. Just pick the best player. We talked about McCarthy being that trade there at five. On the pod yesterday, you detailed the Giants taking Neighbors. I'm thrilled with Neighbors or Dunze. I don't think they should trade up for any of the quarterbacks because, I don't see New England trading three for May. And even if they do, what the Giants are going to have to give up, especially in a draft where they already don't have a lot of picks. They traded away one of their seconds in the Brian Burns deal. Just go get your top receiver. You're already paying Jones. And you have Drew Lock, who maybe the staff likes a little bit more than I do. At seven with Joe Alt, that's perfect. I think Tennessee, I know they didn't end up using a first-round pick on Will Levis, but I'm going to kind of say it's an extension of a first-round pick. They clearly like him. Make sure he has protection because he got rocked last year when he played. It even ended up with him missing a little bit of time.
Agree. Everybody needs protection.
Everybody needs protection. Remember that, kids. Number eight, I definitely like Dallas Turner. I mean, that stat that you read from the Falcons, that's staggering. I knew it was bad, but since 2016, when they tracked this with Next Gen Stats, that's the worst recorded pass rush rate.
It's the lowest pressure rate.
Yeah, lowest pressure rate. So that's ridiculous. And then rounding it out, the Jets at 10, I would go offensive line. I'm kind of with Tom on that, but I don't know, man. The talent of Bowers, and you're already a win-now team, take some pressure off of Garrett Wilson. Brock Bowers is essentially going to be used as a wide receiver anyway. I don't think they're going to be using him in a lot of goal line situations, really. Checking his guy, I think they're going to use him in open space. So I definitely see that making sense. I think it's Bowers or offensive line. I don't think it's anybody else.
Yeah, I totally agree. For me, it's just reading the tea leaves of what have they done this offseason and where might they want to spend assets next. And that's just what led me to Bowers all over the offensive line. But if they're not in on Bowers like this, Indianapolis is a team that seems to be the smitten kitten here with Brock Bowers. Trading with Indianapolis, getting another pick later on that they might be able to use on a playmaker could be beneficial. And maybe they go offensive line later, but I think in this situation, the option that I find most likely for them to do with their need at the tight end position, the amount of assets they've already put into the offensive line this offseason, even if for the most part they are short-term assets, that bring Bowers in and addressing the offensive line with other picks in more developmental backup roles, considering they've got Joe Tippmann, AVT, and then the three others that they brought in starting on the offensive line might be, I would estimate that's how they feel would be a better use of those assets.
And I agree with you. I mean, again, too, is you don't have Rodgers, regardless of what he says, you don't have Rodgers for four or five more years. Go get him a player that immediately steps in and becomes a game changer. And Douglas has done a good job with that early on in the draft, obviously succeeding Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner a couple of years ago. All right, let's move on with pick 11 and roll through 20.
Sure. So pick 11, this is the first one that the Chargers got in the trade. I have them going with right tackle Talise Fuaga from Oregon State. Go Beavers. Everybody loves the Beavers. Jim Harbaugh, I'm not sure if you've heard of him. He plays a lot of old school football, and he likes running the ball. Also, he hired an offensive coordinator named Greg Roman, and Greg Roman really likes running the ball. Talise Fuaga is a absolute grinder, especially in the run game. Really good player, so he can be the other bookend with Rashawn Slater. And being 6'6", 334, which is what Fuaga came in at for the combine, that really fits in with the sort of mold for offensive tackles that the Ravens have looked at, and Ortiz comes from that organization. So just feeling a little bit of the influence from where he was before, fitting in with how the pick works there. I think JC Latham's another one who's in play, but I think Fuaga kind of fits what they're trying to do a little bit better. Now, with that being said, the pick could very well go either way, and I'm more looking at this as one of these guys has a little bit of issues with lateral quickness. The running schemes that Roman likes to run, even though there are a lot of power, you can have a lot of motion with guys, and Fuaga is going to be better in those sorts of pieces. So whichever they go with, again, I have them on the same grade and as my 4 and 5 guys. So it goes either way. Broncos at 12. It's early for where he should go, but I have them going Bo Nix because I simply can't see Sean Payton starting Jared Stidham or Zach Wilson now that they're there. And Bo Nix does what we've seen Sean Payton be successful with. He processes very quickly and is really accurate in the short to intermediate areas of the field. He can put the ball wherever within 30 yards. That's the sort of thing that Sean Payton has had a lot of success with. And all that matters right now in many of these cases is what does Sean Payton want? This is a Sean Payton ship. And if it crashes, it's going to be because of what Sean Payton says. And if it survives and thrives, that's because of Sean Payton's decisions right now. He's a coach with a ton of organizational influence right now. And if this is the guy Sean Payton says he can win with, which based on the parallel skill sets to other guys Sean Payton has been successful with, I think fits well. And again, the Broncos are pretty desperate at the position right now. So then at 13, I have the Raiders going with Quinion Mitchell, the cornerback out of Toledo. I think he's a serious Antonio Pierce type of player. Very physical, very aggressive, makes a lot of plays, and he has the flexibility to play inside and outside. He's a great mover in addition to someone who has a really good motor and plays the way that you want star players to play. You want them to have that grit, that toughness. Again, another quarterback situation, but I see it as less desperate than the Broncos, though Penix and the Raiders are very well connected, but I think it's more likely they trade back up. The Broncos lack a second round pick, so they have a much more difficult situation trying to trade back up. But I think the Raiders, who have Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell, that's a less desperate situation than the Broncos situation. So weird sentence, but there we are. At 14, I have the New Orleans Saints going with Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle out of Penn State. Ryan Ramczyk and Trevor Penning, they are injured and they are struggling. Fashanu is a standout as a pass protector. He's going to take that money that you spent on Derek Carr and make that money a little bit safer. Again, they have a lot of needs and they have very little cap space. Mickey Loomis, once again, is a dull boy and can't do all that much except for restructuring contracts. So they didn't have the opportunity to go out and get players who are going to make the big difference, but I think Fashanu is going to really help them in pass pro. And at the Colts here at 15, I have one that is a bit of a shock, I assume, as I haven't seen it elsewhere, but I think that the fit is excellent. And as I bring these up somewhat regularly, because I think that they really do matter, this is one of the few prospects that I see as a first round player that the Colts brought in as a top 30 visit. And that's Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver out of Texas.
Wow.
I think it'd be a great balance with Michael Pittman. Pittman's a big possession receiver and Now we have Xavier Worthy, who hits quick routes and is a demon with a ton of speed. He's going to be able to get hit by Anthony Richardson deep. He provides them with an element of quickness and ability after the catch that wide receiver room is really lacking in, and could really fit with the sorts of building blocks that they have there. He's going to bring them something that they don't yet have, which I think is going to be really important for them, especially as they're trying to round out a skill position group that, you know, still needs a couple big plays. I have the Seahawks at 16 going with Troy.
Can we take a quick pause real fast?
Every time I get through five, we have to take a break.
Well, because each time your five has been very surprising to me. Last time you had the trade, now you got fucking Xavier Worthy going 15. All the reasons that you said make sense. I feel like, though, I mean, is he the next receiver that makes the most sense for them? Like, could you get a Brian Thomas? Like, I just feel like Xavier Worthy's really good, but he's somebody you would fall in love with if you took him later on or traded back up to go get. Grabbing him at 15, I feel like that's just a huge misuse of value.
Yeah, I've got his his grade is slightly below this. But for me, if you would take him at 25, you know, that everyone would say home run. You take him at 15. There are other guys on the board who I think are higher rated. Also at positions in need, cornerback in particular. Brian Thomas, I think, also very worthy of the pick. I've got Brian Thomas ahead of Xavier Worthy in my grades. But because of the way that Xavier Worthy complements what they already have with Michael Pittman, I just think it's a better fit for the team. And they've already shown more interest in the top 30 visit that they had with Worthy. Brian Thomas didn't have one with them, which does also, again, this influences the way that I think about how I'm matching them up. I look at these lists, who had what meetings at combines, who met with who at the Super Bowl, the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, and all of those pieces influence the way that I'm mocking these out. This isn't the order that I would take, but I think that with the connections that they've had, as well as the fit between Xavier Worthy and Michael Pittman in particular, and Xavier Worthy is going to offer a great deep threat that I think also allows them to take somebody out of the box for Jonathan Taylor as he keeps trying to keep moving forward through some of the struggles he had. So those are the reasons that I have Xavier Worthy where I do. And it is higher than most do, and it is slightly higher than where my grades have him at. But I think that for the Colts, the pick could make a lot of sense, and they have shown some interest in the player that is higher than interest they've shown in other players.
Sorry to interrupt, but that's the name of the podcast. All right, continue on.
Yeah, fair enough. I get what I get. At 16, I have the Seahawks going with Troy Fatanu, new offensive coordinator for the Seahawks, was the offensive coordinator last year with Washington, where Fatanu was the left tackle, but for a lefty quarterback, so he didn't have the blind side, which I know folks love to talk about and nitpick with it. And Fatanu going to the Seahawks, he's someone who I think is really versatile. He's going to be able to start at guard as well, just immediately. That's going to be a big upgrade to that group while also having the ability to play offensive tackle if anything happens to Cross or Lucas. At 17, I've got the Jacksonville Jaguars going with Terrion Arnold, the cornerback out of Alabama. Really physical, scheme versatile player. The new defensive coordinator coming from Atlanta, he can't get through a sentence without using the words attack or aggressive. And Terrion Arnold is an attacking and aggressive corner. He's going to fill a weakness, and they do have a pretty balanced roster. The secondary, they did add Ronald Darby and Darnell Savage, but I think that bringing Arnold in is going to really increase the athleticism and the depth that they have. At 18, this is where I have the other wide receiver going, Brian Thomas, the wide receiver out of LSU. T. Higgins hasn't signed his franchise tag. Tyler Boyd hasn't signed, period. Brian Thomas offers a lot of playmaking. He's got a similar size and really to T. Higgins and offers some deep threat potential. Cincinnati prefers to go after bigger receivers, and they've had a lot of success getting them from the Bayou. So, you know, go Tigers. At 19, I've got the Rams getting Jerzon Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle out of Illinois. Not sure if you've heard, but Aaron Donald retired. Kobe Turner and Johnny Newton can work to try and come close, maybe. No one's going to be able to come close, but they do need someone to fill the gap, the literal gap in the depth chart, not the gap of Aaron Donald just destroying everybody. I think Newton's a really good player and fits what they need. Putting him next to Kobe Turner is going to really help there. This is a spot where they could also attack the pass rush from the outside, but is, you know, a little bit tougher for them to, you know, work through in this way. So I think that's another spot where we could really see somebody taking a shot with him there. Give me 1 second. All right.
Anytime.
That's what I thought. All right. You know, and another person to watch, obviously, there is Byron Murphy. So anyway, and the last piece to round out the top 20 here, I've got J.C. Latham, the right tackle from Alabama. This allows them to put Broderick Jones from right tackle to left tackle. And then Latham plays right tackle. Jones goes back to the position that he came out playing. And I think that would work really well for them. As you switch Dan Moore, he can go to the bench where he's probably best. Steelers need much better offensive line play. They've got improved situation at quarterback, and now we can see how they're improving it elsewhere. So I think this would be a great spot for Latham to land and good match with the Steelers.
I like that fit a lot. Makes sense. I mean, you got two quarterbacks that they've acquired or signed that are at very different stages of the careers, but also ironically, kind of at the same level of import in terms of what the rest of their futures look like, however long or short it may be. Russell Wilson is in there. I mean, they're not paying him a dime. That's all coming from Denver. So whatever, if he doesn't win the job. But then you've got Justin Fields, who you didn't have to give up much to get, but clearly they believe in him. And there's a lot of talk early on of whether the Bears should have even moved off of him in the first place. I was not in that camp. Caleb Williams, plus we're Fields is coming up in the contract. That's a no-brainer. But in this range here, 11 to 20, you had four offensive linemen go. So obviously Joe Alt was the only one that you had in the top 10. I was expecting to see a lot of them go here, and they did. And then also you went with two corners, right? So I think the top two corners are shown there. The fit there with the Raiders, I think, makes a lot of sense. I understand the Penix conversation, but to get a real stud corner, I mean, that just in today's NFL can make such a change, depending on, especially you look at an Antonio Pierce team, like he wants his defense to be a reason they win, and they gave up way too many big plays last year for his liking. That makes a lot of sense. Brian Thomas to Cincinnati. My question for you is, if that's the case, are we seeing a draft day trade with T. Higgins?
I mean, very possible. He seems to be holding pretty firm. I think that it'd be a great move for both sides if they want to do that. If Higgins wants to try and hold out further, that's up to him. If Higgins comes back, I think the three of them is a pretty phenomenal crew for one season until Higgins leaves after the franchise tag is over. But this gives them a little bit more flexibility, the chance to fight a little bit more hardball with it. And also just gets them a really good player to help out Joe Burrow or whoever's playing quarterback at the end of that season. Because, you know, Burrow's had plenty of injury issues. And while we're not taking a backup this early, we can certainly make the situation for the backup a lot better.
They don't go receiver and they do decide to finally pay Higgins. What's a position that the Bengals could go in if it's not receiver?
Defensive line, I think either Byron Murphy or Johnny Newton, either of those would be great situations to have. And offensive line, it's where everyone always wants the Bengals to look, and it's where the Bengals never look. They don't do it. It's what it is. But they do prefer larger offensive linemen. You can just look at the mammoths that they put on both sides of the offensive line right now, between Orlando Brown and Trent Brown. So that's a place they could look, probably more likely the interior offensive line. But that's value-wise is a little bit trickier to get into at this spot. I think that this is just an approach that allows them flexibility for what they have. And if they want to then take T. Higgins and trade him for a day two pick that allows them to add more depth to the offensive line. And as we talk about, even though it's hard to understand while we're using other teams, but it's the draft is going to keep going and you can find starters on day two and you find big impact players on day three. And there's a couple guys we never hear of who go, how did everyone miss him? And working out some of those pieces is what you got to do. I think Thomas makes a lot of sense for the Bengals, offers them flexibility, offers them an escape plan, and is just a damn good football player who fits the sort of way that they play.
No, it makes all the sense in the world to me. I really like that selection there. I was wondering where you were going to have him going. And that range feels exactly right. And that fit feels exactly right with or without T. Higgins. Why don't we go 21 through 32? And then we'll allow you to make your final three selections for the poor teams that don't have first. And I'm going to do a really, really my best effort to not interrupt you at pick 25 unless you have the Packers doing something nuts. So that's kind of on you.
Damn, you're going to interrupt me. All right, so to round out the rest of this draft, I've got the here we are. I got the Dolphins going with Kingsley Suamataya. I think Byron Murphy here would be a perfect fit, but the offensive line has some big holes. Suamataya is an offensive tackle who I think could move to guard and be really successful while also being athletic enough to go the other route. He's really good at blocking and movement, and that sort of system Mike McDaniels is running is all about blocking and movement in the run game. It's perfect for his skill set, and his biggest weakness is struggling to get out as far in his kick slide to meet with outside speed rushers coming from the 7 or 9. Moving someone to guard mitigates that issue. He's at his best when he can use his strength, his mobility, and his quickness to mirror rushers. And he's going to be able to do that from guard really well and potentially move out to tackle if that's where they'd prefer him at too. I have the Eagles. This one really hurt me. I have the Eagles going with Cooper DeJean, and that hurts my soul. The starting corners for the Eagles right now are 33 and 31. That's old. That's not how long corners usually ask. And though the Eagles typically build in the trenches, occasionally when the value's right, they will go out there and find a skill player a la Devontae Smith. I think DeJean will be one of those guys. He can move throughout the secondary, so his athleticism and his IQ are going to help him if they keep those guys starting and he moves slot or is in packages or moves to safety slot for a bit. But I think he'd be a really good person to bring into the system, potentially replace one of those guys. And if not, he's going to find his way on the field. The Chargers at 23 have what I think is the steal of the draft in Byron Murphy. He's someone who I think could go as high as 9 to the Bears. If the Bears go defense, Byron Murphy is the 3 technique that Matt Eberflus needs and loves. Phenomenal flexibility, great balance, really quick, relentless energy, tons of quickness. I think that he's getting a lot of talk as some of the as one of the top defensive players in this draft. I think he's going to be high on some teams' boards, but the way it fell for mine, even though he could go to the Dolphins, who lost Christian Wilkins, or again, the Bears all the way up there, the middle slot was where it got a little bit iffy. I almost went with him at the Bengals, but decided to go with Brian Thomas just because of the uncertainty at wide receiver. And the Chargers work out with this here for trading back from 5 and passing on someone like Joe Alt. They could walk away as a pair like Talisse Fuaga and have him going across from Byron Murphy, which I think is a pretty damn good draft if you're the Chargers. I have the Cowboys going with Graham Barton, the offensive lineman out of Duke. it's a theme with the Cowboys that they are very willing to take guys who have certain athletic traits and move their positions. And this is one of those cases where they take someone who's been playing left tackle the last 3 years, send him inside to left guard or center. It fits his skill set better. It's not, sort of what I said about Suan Matia, a couple spots up. But I think Barton needs to come inside, where Suan Matia has the ability to go both ways. He's, but probably not his rookie year. Barton is really an interior player. The Packers, we'll find out how wild you find this. I've got the Packers going with Max Melton, the cornerback out of Rutgers. If you look at the history of this regime for the Packers, they like to draft impact athletes on defense in the first round. Quick list over the last few drafts: Eric Stokes, Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt, and Lukash Van Ness, all first rounders. Max Melton, he's a big time athlete at cornerback. He can go inside or outside. On the inside, he'd be battling some Kayshon Nixon, who just came over from the Raiders. I think Melton's athletic ability, his traits, and his willingness to step up in the run game and tackle open field are going to be ways that he's very effective for the Packers and fits their theme of always drafting impact guys on defense. In fact, the last first round pick that the Packers spent on offense was Jordan Love.
I got nothing to interrupt you on that one, to be honest with you. It makes a lot of sense.
All right. Well, 26, I have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers stealing Jared Verse. This is just another one where the value is perfect. Tampa Bay needs serious edge rushers. And, you know, this is someone who I think is going to really help Todd Bowles, who is a defensive coach, as we know, but he really cut his tooth or his teeth. Why are we cutting teeth? But he made his success starting as a coach.
No, man, you're the one with the sayings.
He's the one. He started as a coach in the secondary, and his skills there are only going to be even more impactful as he's able to let someone like Jared Verse loose. They do a lot of blitzing as well, and Verse is much more of an athletic prospect right now than he is a, you know, highly touted one for his technique. Those athletic traits are going to be especially prominent when going through on a blitz, because it's more likely he'll get single coverage, or it's more likely that he's going to be able to just use his speed and maybe close while everyone's looking at what's happening from the inside out. With that, I'll also just point out that Buccaneers finished third in blitz rate last year. So we know that it's going to be, it's been a long couple weeks of doing this stuff in the last few days. I got about 10 hours on pods with you, so my voice is going. My wife must be thrilled. At 27, I've got the Cardinals going with Nate Wiggins, cornerback out of Clemson. He's a really springy corner, excellent movement abilities, and while he needs to pack muscle on, he's going to be the best cornerback the Cardinals have day one. This is a secondary that really needs an influx of talent. And I think that Wiggins is going to bring that. Bills, I have them going with A.D. Mitchell. Bills lost a receiver this offseason by the name of Gabe Davis. And Mitchell has a similar height to him. There's also another receiver. Anyway, Mitchell has a lot of speed, and he also brings a lot of size and some nuance to his route running, though it still is very much a work in progress. And Mitchell, I think, is going to have a really good balance for the other receivers that are likely to start for the Bills in Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, who are going to spend a lot more time underneath and intermediate. Mitchell gets to be that more traditional big body X. I have the Lions at 29 going with Darius Robinson, the defensive lineman or edge from Missouri. He can start at edge and then maybe bump inside for Marcus Davenport coming in a designated pass rusher role. Robinson played across the entire offense or defensive line. If you listen to the pods, you'll hear all about how infatuated I am with this guy. I think he's a phenomenal player, and he fits who the Lions are. He brings a relentless energy every time, every snap, and he fits with the mold of what that team is. I have the Ravens going with Chop Robinson, huge athlete. And huge, I mean, in terms of his athletic traits. Still needs to have some refinement, but they love getting players from the Big Ten. And there's still a lot of draft left. I know Lamar Jackson is often the focus, but I think someone in the later rounds, like Tez Walker, would be a perfect fit for the Ravens. And then going here and doing what the Ravens do, which is taking elite athletes from the, you know, cold weather conferences, where they are able to keep working on their refinements as they find ways to make big plays along the way too. I have the 49ers at 31 going with Xavier Leggett, the wide receiver from South Carolina. And this is where we start to fade off in my first round grades. I think the Ravens or the 49ers could both be looking at Javon Bullard. He's another one who is a safety who also plays in the slot and is very athletic. So I think he, or maybe even Tyler Newbin, but less likely with the Ravens, who focus more on athletic profile, are, you know, safeties who might slip into the first tier. But I've got the Niners going with Xavier Leggett, the wide receiver from South Carolina. This is another one. Brandon Ayuk, we have a future in jeopardy. Instead of waiting for that to change, you can be proactive with someone who also will bring you a lot of value if you're able to keep them. We're restocking the position while Ayuk's future is in jeopardy. We have an athlete with a ton of ability who lacks refinement, but really powerful after the catch, is a phenomenal yards after catch player, attacks every level of the field, attacks the ball viciously, and needs to refine their route running and their turning tools into talent. And that's what we're working on here. I've got the Chiefs at the end of the first round going with Amarius Mims, the offensive tackle from Georgia. He has 8 starts in his career, and those 8 starts are not all of the snaps he's had, because when you play at Georgia, you get to come in as a reserve often. He has played 800 snaps of college football and has had 8 starts. But he has really elite tools and decent movement. He's got a ton of mass and power and thrives on physicality. His feet are a bit heavy. His recovery athleticism is still there and is better than some others at his size. But the heavy feet are really what's holding him back from being higher, as well as the lack of experience. But another piece I caught from Adam Schefter earlier today was that his wingspan, Amarius Mims, not Adam Schefter's, is only a quarter inch shorter than Giannis Antetokounmpo's. So that's a lot of wingspan for edge rushers to have to get around. Chiefs spend this pick here. And as much as they need someone to replace the receivers they've lost in the past, as well as Rashee Rice, who's likely to miss some time in the future, given some of the, given his most recent arrests, I think this is a position they could go wide receiver, but Mims has too much talent to pass on. And so I think this is where they're going to wrap up, take a tackle who's going to get time to develop behind Juwan Taylor. And as they are developing and working on some of the more quickness-focused parts of the position so that they're not totally dependent on their athletic traits and their strength, and mostly in this case, their wingspan. Because really what we're talking about is, how are you meeting speed rushers? Because if they can bend by that arm, or if they can chop those arms, which again, very hard to do, but if they can, you're just going to, you keep getting punked. Let him keep developing. And, you know, through all of this, you still got Patrick Mahomes back there. You're giving him a little bit more depth at the tackle positions. And I think no quarterback's going to be upset about that.
Oh, I really like the picks that you made to round out this first round. I mean, Chop Robinson to the Ravens feels like a match made in heaven for both parties. I could just see him becoming an elite player on Baltimore's defense. You got Leggett at 31 to San Francisco, regardless of whatever future Brandon Ayuk has. You know, listen, this is, they know the kind of players. They identified players that fit them more than anybody, better than anybody, I should say. I mean, look at the value they found in Bell out of Michigan in what, the 7th round last year? Like, they know what the hell they're doing. And I feel like Leggett, even if maybe it's a little bit of a reach, When it's San Francisco, I just don't question it. A wide receiver there, get him in their room, get him in that offense, as long as he has a high motor, which it sounds like he does. And he's been kind of flying up draft boards anyway. That makes a lot of sense. And then for Kansas City, listen, everybody's going to talk about receiver, and I know it's been much maligned, but if there's a quarterback that can make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, I really like the fact that Mahomes is getting another guy who hopefully, as Mahomes' career continues to go on, is the next big-time tackle and pass protector for him. I think that they can find receivers later in the draft. They can find some UFAs. Maybe they make a trade at some point. I don't doubt Mahomes being able to make something work, but to continue to build that offensive line and do it cheaply while you've got Mahomes and a lot of money tied up in other guys, I think that just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and again, they can find players, but the draft isn't over, you know, just yet. There's going to be a lot of guys on day two for them to look at.
That's what I mean. Like, they can, I like their chances of finding a receiver later on in the draft than I do of an offensive lineman that could potentially be an impact player for them this year and obviously going forward when you look at the talent and the amount of reps that you detail that Amarius Mims has. I really like the Jared Verse pick to Tampa Bay. Verse is a monster, man. He's an absolute beast. And I think him in that Todd Bowles defense, that could be something really special. I think they would have the right plan for him to really unlock all the talent that he has and be a little bit more of a consistent player. But they do a good job on that defense, man. And if you're committing to Baker again and you're running it back with him and Mike Williams, the offense is going to have their good days. They're going to have their not so good days. But the one thing that you can consistently bet on with Tampa Bay is that defense is going to be there and it's going to show up. You just got him another big-time playmaker there.
Heavy compete from that team.
Heavy compete.
All right, so then I'll wrap up this with the final three picks to discuss, which are the teams who don't have first-round picks. So the Panthers at 33, I've got them taking Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver out of Georgia. He's got legitimate deep speed, great route runner, and his agility in the routes is also very strong. He can play inside and outside, and he's someone who's going to get to that spot for Bryce. Panthers really got to find ways to make life easier for Bryce Young. They signed two new guards who are going to, you know, really help out that interior of the offensive line, which struggled hard. And now if you can get him a receiver who can, you know, get open, I think that's going to be a big piece for them. At 42, I've got the Houston Texans taking one of my favorite players, Michael Hall Jr. He's a defensive lineman from Ohio State. The Houston Texans roster is pretty loaded. So what do they get? A defensive weapon. And Michael Hall is just that. He's going to offer pass rushing ability that is rare, the ability to just split through little gaps in offense, and he is out of a cannon on the snap. Putting him inside and the threat of his quickness is going to make it so Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson are going to be able to thrive. He might not be a day one starter for the Texans, but he's going to be a day one player for the Texans. And at 54, I have the Browns. They're going to take Brandon Dorlus, which I think is pretty good for them. Last draft, they didn't get to pick till 74, so 54 must be a real luxury. Brandon Dorlus is a defensive lineman from Oregon, 6'3", 290. He's a bit of a tweener. He spent a lot of time on the edge in college, but I think his NFL position is going to be in that three technique D lineman, a little bit more inside. Really good motor, always working, and plays with a lot of power. He can work in all phases of the game, but he needs a plan so he can do something more than just attacking with his hands and going for a bull rush, which was basically his entire pass rushing plan while he was in college. And that is all of the first picks of teams without first round picks.
Standing ovation I'm giving you over Zoom here. Great job, Frenchie. Awesome job. I got to tell you what, man, I love how you detail the fits, because again, when we're watching the draft and the casual fans who really don't know a lot of these players, they just hear their names. You want the splashes, you want the sexy positions, you want the fantasy impact, because that's become such a thing now. I don't play fantasy for that reason. I like watching football players in relation to, you know, how they play football and not worrying about points for fantasy. Some people like yourself can do both. I can't. But I really like how you detail the fits with a lot of these teams because it does make a lot of sense, right? And maybe you don't know who these players are. Maybe you're not sure where they're coming from or what kind of impact they can have from day one. But the most important thing is you ought to understand why your team is making selections. You don't want to be thinking, oh, I've never heard of this guy. Oh, I wanted the receiver. What the hell are they doing going defensive tackle? It's like, well, you know, from a value standpoint, this is why we do, again, why we do have you do your rankings first, well before the mocks, because the rankings matter and the values matter and comparing value from different positions matter. Yeah. I think just round out my thought here, when you're talking about a team like Cleveland who's drafting 54th, to get a player of that caliber on the defensive line, I mean, they've given up essentially nothing to go get some really good players, but they've been very short in the draft. Go make the most out of it and get a player on the defensive line. What's the Browns' strength? Their defense. Make it better right there. If that makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about a lot of the rankings is that we have the luxury of being able to rank players at large. NFL teams have to rank players for their system and for what their team needs. And that's a very different process than what we do on the outside, which is just how good I think the player is, how good a player could be. NFL teams are thinking about how good is that player in our system, which is a very different conversation than the ones that we're having. A lot of these teams are going to have players that we're not focused on because that's not what they're looking at, or they might not fit the system. So for most of these teams, what it really comes down to is finding players who work within their construct. And this is why when I'm trying to do these mock drafts, I'm looking at the draft history of what this team has done before, or I'm looking at how it is that they view certain positions. All these pieces kind of add up to a different mock than what you might traditionally see, because I put a lot of weight into what the teams have done before.
Right.
So that's all I'll say on the matter is with all of these, it's about what the teams are looking for and what fits their needs, which is a different conversation than who's the best player right now.
And I think, too, is looking at the connections, looking at trends that certain GMs and coaching staffs have had, especially the ones that have been intact for a while. You know, you referencing high school coaches that now have ties to certain organizations and whatnot. Like, those things really do matter. And I think the thing that drives me the most nuts is when you have so much information out there. Obviously, I think everybody should only be listening to you. But you have all this information out there, and all the time you hear people with platforms who say, I don't know what they're doing, or I don't know what they're thinking, playing armchair expert, right? Like armchair analysis, armchair GM, coach, whatever. It's like, well, we could tell you why they're picking these players. We could tell you their thought process. In a lot of cases, it's not that complicated. Nobody's just going up there blindly making a selection about a player. There's a lot that goes into this. There's a lot of contingency plans. There's a lot of, you know, maneuverability. They're waiting to see how the draft shakes out, how the board's looking. There's always a reason. So I think what drives me the most insane as somebody who really does try to educate themselves on this is when people are like, I don't know why they do this. I don't know what they're thinking. Booing the pick. So stupid. There's so much information out there to tell you why these teams are doing these things. You don't have to agree with it. But don't act like these teams don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, and this is one thing that I think it's important for all of us to keep in context is they have more information. Sometimes that's analysis paralysis, but the most important piece with any of this is to try and understand why it is that they're making these selections. Even probably especially picks that you don't like. I know you and I went through this process long ago in long phone calls and conversations about, you know, how it is that someone could take Daniel Jones. But, you know,
then, you know, like there were a lot of things that I didn't take into consideration. I knew they needed a quarterback and wanted one.
Hell, even Adam Schefter's most recent article where he was putting out some draft notes that he had, one of the things that he pointed out is that Les Snead was a graduate assistant at Auburn when Bo Nix's dad was a player. And the way that he saw that was like, well, here we have a potential connection. These guys spent some time together. It's very possible that they might be, you know, connected and conversing in some sorts of ways. When you have that sort of contact with somebody, it's easier for you to do things like, you know, trust the person, which is really hard for these teams to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's, it's not telling you what's going to happen, but it's giving you an insight into any bit of information is at least it's credible. It's something that you can take into account. It's not, what's the phrase you use? It may not be something, but it's not nothing. It's something along those lines, right? So for me, I think that this process since the Daniel Jones situation is I've tried to do a better job of educating myself as to why teams are making certain decisions or what teams are looking for or why players are being connected to them outside of just positional need or talent. Because let's be honest, regardless of where you're drafting, all of these players are talented. All of these players could be really good. All these players have potential to be Hall of Famers, some more so than others, but it's incumbent upon the teams. And going back to when we were doing your French fives, I wanted to really hit home the point. There's a reason there's good teams and bad teams, and the good teams always have a plan in place for the players they're selecting. The bad teams don't. And it's kind of how I feel about dog owners. There's no bad dogs. There's just bad owners. Like, you know,
if there's a bad pick,
you can figure it out for the most part if you're willing to put in the time and the attention and you have a true plan in place.
Yep. And that's all you can do is try and make it work, and best of luck to him. At this point, Sean, I am shot though. I think it's time to call it a pod. I can't wait to come back after this draft is done, reflect on this, and talk about all the, you know, picks that I got right, all both of them.
Well, you have definitely put in a ton of work. The amount of gratitude from Tom, Will, and I cannot be expressed enough. And thank you for your expertise. Thank you for using our platform as your medium to do what you do best, and that's explain everything and all the hard work that you put in over the months. And yeah, next week we'll get to tell you that you're an idiot. It's going to be really fun.
Cannot wait.
All right, everybody. Take care. Everybody enjoy, and we'll be talking to y'all soon.
Make sure to have your dogs and cats spayed and neutered.